And we're spending the day this afternoon with the Vintage Aircraft Division of EAA. And in studio, H.G. Frouchy. We've got Addison Pemberton from Spokane, Washington. And, of course, Steve Krogh from Vintage as well. Gentlemen, we were bantering about on Addison's beautiful Model 40 Boeing, which you restored over the last number of years. And we were thinking about talking about that trip out here, because that's quite a haul for an old airplane.
And appreciate the capability. I mean, these pilots flew these things 10 hours a day, oftentimes at night. Our course line took us from Spokane through Montana into the Dakotas. We spent 2 days in Spencer, Iowa, hopping rides with the pilot's family who crashed the airplane. The airplane is very nice to fly in smooth air. In turbulence, it's very taxing. Any turbulence will upset the level attitude of the airplane. You grab the stick with two hands and drag everything you have to get that wing back up. Complemented with about 50 pounds of rudder pressure, you get the wings leveled, and about 5 seconds later, you get to do it the other way. And this goes on for 2 or 3 hours, and 3 hours of that, you're pretty well cooked. So my limit in rough air is about 6 hours a day, and I'm pretty well done.
Now, is Ryan helping you do the flying as well? Because I know he's an accomplished pilot also. Yeah,
both my sons are very accomplished old airplane pilots.
What's your other son's name?
His name is Jay.
Jay and Ryan.
Yeah. Ryan. Ryan's my younger son. Ryan's flown our speed mail, all of our Stearmans for years. My son Jay has flown the Boeing as well. I wanted to hear it. It sounds very cool on the ground. But traveling in smooth air is a pleasant experience. Obviously, with a GPS 496, you stay away from the big green monster, and that makes life a bit pleasant. Cruise speeds are 120 consistently. The airplane likes about 7,500 feet. And the biggest challenge in flight is the forward visibility. Even in flight is very poor. In mountainous terrain, the course line is a constant S-turn. I mean, you could drive this thing into a hill and not even know. I can't see beyond the rear cabane struts. Everything forward of that is pretty well blocked. So you can appreciate S-turning, even to get through a mountain pass, is a bit of a challenge. The 496 paints all my towers and things, and there's a lot of towers I never see. Obviously, they appear appropriately on the screen there, and I look for them. With that said, the wind tolerance of the airplane is excellent. That was quite a surprise. We've had it in crosswinds up to 25 knots at 45 degrees and not used more than about one-third of its control capability, which was a real surprise to me. The airplane tracks the runway beautifully. Once it's on, it just loves going straight with lots of aileron discipline to keep a wing down as necessary. So that's pleasant. Takeoff rolls are relatively short. Even at some 8,000 and 9,000 foot density altitudes, our longest takeoff rolls are 10 or 15 seconds, which is pretty neat. You go out of some of these high airports on a 90 degree day and just blast out of there. Nothing like 10 pounds per square foot.
Now, do you lock your tail wheel to start and then bring the tail up? So, how's your visibility once you get the tail up then?
Well, on a small runway, you can jack the tail up pretty high. Then visibility is better than even in flight. The airplane has no incidents. So it flies in normal flight with about 2 degrees of nose-high attitude, which is convenient enough to block your vision. We thought about, you know, if they could take the wings off and screw them back on another 2 degrees, that would help things very nicely. But with that said, in takeoff, you can jack the tail up if needed to see. On a wide runway, 75 foot or wider, that's really not necessary. Airplane flies off tail low very nicely.
Go ahead, HG.
Yeah, if I may, Addison, one of the questions that folks have had is how long those airplanes were operated in service.
Well, they went into operation, the A model Boeing 40, in 1927. If you can appreciate, in January of 1927, Bill Boeing accepted a contract to fly between San Francisco and Chicago. He was given but 6 months to build 25 airplanes, have 25 plus pilots trained on station, plus the infrastructure to support that airmail route, and he pulled it off. This is with a fairly unknown Pratt & Whitney 1340 engine, which by 1925 incorporated sodium-filled exhaust valves, stellite valve guides, superchargers, metallurgy that was really unheard of at the time. But imagine that six-month task. Here you've got a contract to support a pretty ambitious task, and he pulls it off in 6 months. The airplanes were operational till 1931, when the 247, followed by the DC-3, made the airplane a dinosaur overnight.
Yeah. Did they, of those 25 airplanes, did they station those kind of like
Pony
handing
Express.
Off the baton?
Yep, the Pony Express, exactly. And that was, he did it successfully. He went on to build 81 Boeing 40s before the production run was finished.
Wow, yeah, Mike Costa is, you know, when Mike Costa arrives from Vintage, everybody stops talking and starts looking.
Well, they just start staring.
Yeah, start staring. What is that? We'll talk to Mike in the next half hour here. But the adventure across the country, you wouldn't change anything about it. It was the weather was good. The family was all with you. You had ground support? Part of the crew was on the ground?
No, we were we just
you were all in the
off.
Plane.
Yep. Pratt & Whitney, reliability, Hamilton standard smoothness, and GPS 496, our best friend. We go on from Oshkosh to leave the airplane in Midwest for about 3 weeks down in Missouri.
You knew Blakesburg and Broadhead both? Or?
Blakesburg, Broadhead, and then on to New York. And we will refly the transcontinental airmail route to San Francisco and include all the original 15 airmail stops.
No kidding.
We'll be carrying mail for the post office.
How exciting. Type clubs. Steve. We have to wake him up again.
No, he's been very attentive. He's been
I think it looks like a shopping list for his wife.
Yeah, it's her birthday on Wednesday. I have to remember that.
We'll help you remember.
Yeah, that's right. We won't let you down, Steve. Type clubs, what's new with type clubs this year?
I wouldn't say there's anything brand new there, but what we've tried to do is get more and more, even of the smaller type clubs involved, give them an opportunity to have some presence here at AirVenture. We have about 23 type clubs represented in the type club booth this year.
Now this is kind of a special year for type clubs, isn't it? Didn't EA go out of its way to accommodate type clubs in kind of a different way?
Well, actually, here in the Vintage area in particular, because type clubs are such an integral part of what it is that we do, and if you're an EA member and you have a special interest in Vintage airplanes, typically you have a particular affinity for a particular airplane. You know, I'm an Oronka guy. Steve's a Cub guy and a Luscombe guy, personally, but he has interest in those other aircraft. And we've always done our best to, or tried to do our best, to accommodate folks who have those special interests. This year, and over the last number of years, we have increased the size of the Type Club tent and tried to accommodate as many of those actual organizations. And we're talking about Type Clubs that might only have, you know, a couple dozen airplanes. There are some very small Type Clubs out there, but they all have the same concerns.
How many have we added over the last 5 years?
I would, since I've got involved in working with the Type Clubs hands-on here, Jeff, we've added about 5 or 6 different Type Clubs that come back and actively participate year in AirVenture.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite something to accommodate that additional number every year. So it's growing.
And we try to make it very attractive for them to come back. After all, in many cases, they are the only source for technical support and information for their particular type of aircraft. And as HG mentioned, in some cases, these type clubs only have maybe a handful or more of airplanes, but it doesn't make any difference if you're involved in an airplane where there's only a handful or if you're involved in a group like the Cub Club where there are thousands out there. You have a special affinity for it, so.
I know the Cub Club and the Luscombe Club, that's kind of a mainstay of the type club. It's been there for a long time. What are some of the new clubs that you've had interest from here?
Well, there have been several. The Funk Club has come on board in the last few years. And again, that's one of the very small groups in this day and age. There's another group, the Commonwealth Sky Ranger folks are participating.
Certainly one of the smallest clubs out there. I can't even tell you how many of those airplanes are registered, but I know it's less than a couple dozen.
Yes. But it's great to have them there, and it's the one place that they could come to, centrally located for the other 12 or 15 individuals that own those airplanes and are looking for support.
Yeah. And we're still here for another half an hour. We'll be right back
Yep.
on EA Radio.